years ago, Joyce and I had the privilege of visiting Israel and Egypt. And on that trip, we didn't know anybody. We had about 35 people on our tour, and we couldn't find anybody to go with, so we went with a bunch of strangers. Not really. We just, it was a tour, and we were the only two people out of our circle of friends that went on that tour. But we met an older couple on that tour from New York City, actually a Jewish couple. There was a lot of different people in 35 people that we met, a lot of weird people, really. No, but this old Jewish couple, he had made his fortune making coat hangers. Coat hanger industry, he had done very well, but each of you wearing clothes today, and I'm glad you are, by the way, but inside of your clothes, there are care labels. And this older Jewish gentleman made another fortune because he's the one who invented the care label. And he started making those and putting those in clothes. And so every time I see a care label, I think of that older couple. Now, Samson was not only born with a care label, he was conceived with a care label. God had specific instructions for the life of Samson. In fact, he had some instructions for Samson's mother before Samson was born. If you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn to the 13th chapter of the book of Judges. And I also want you to put your seatbelts on, because we're going to cover 13 through 16 in just 20 minutes or so. And all of you can laugh right now if you want to. But when you open the 13th chapter and you get down to about verse 4, "Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean, because you will conceive and give birth to a son." That's told to his mother. An angel has come from God to tell her that. "No razor may be used on his head, because the boy is to be a Nazarite." Keep that in your mind. "Set apart to God from birth, and he will begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines." When the Hebrew children went into the promised land, they were to drive out all of the other people in that land, because God knew how fickle they would be. The only thing is, they never did get around to driving out the Philistines. In fact, Samuel's born into the Danite tribe. The Danite tribe wanted to cast out or throw out the Philistines, but they just never did it. And so the Philistines are going to be a thorn in the flesh of the Jewish nation all the way through the King David and a little bit beyond. And so it's interesting how this is set up. If you read this verse, it says he is to be set apart to God from birth, and he will begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines. So this was sort of a first effort. This was something God wanted Samson to do, and yet he was just to be the beginning of it. He was not to take care of it. Samson did less with more than anybody that's ever lived. He did less with more. He had God giving him instructions. He had God who had called him specifically to be a Nazarite, who did not drink alcohol, who did not cut his hair, who could not touch anything unclean or eat anything unclean. He was to be set apart by God for a great purpose. It's the same battle that we face, folks, every day. Samson had the battle between the flesh and the spirit. Samson sort of wanted to do what God had called him and really made him to be, but he had trouble with the flesh. As Frank said a few moments ago, he was not a stellar character in the Bible. We're going to see a lot of his faults as we move through this. But the whole issue is today that even a fallen hero can be restored. That restoration of any life can happen. I am a product of God's restoration through His Son, Jesus Christ. Many of you sitting in this room are a product of God's restoration of a wayward soul, a hero that has fallen, somebody that has made a vow, somebody who has made promises to God and has not carried those promises out in their life. Samson is a poster child for that kind of life. His flesh was so strong to him that he could not do what God had called him to do or be. When you move to chapter 14, the first two verses set up the first major event that's going to happen in the life of Samson. Samson went down to Timnah, by the way, which is in the Philistine territory, and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." A lot of things about this. Samson says, "I saw this woman." Now you understand, he didn't talk to her at all. He's simply going on physical attraction. How many times have we fallen for that? Something we see with our eyes and with our flesh, and we are attracted to that. And rather than live for the Spirit, we fall and live for the flesh. Samson saw her, and he simply went home and said, "Mom, Dad, I want that woman to be my wife, and I expect you to get her." Now, we all already see he's a little disrespectful, don't we? He goes on in verse 3, and he says, "She is the right one for me." Now, here's the thing. If you look at the Hebrew actually says, "In my eyes, she is the right woman to be my wife." All he's going on is his sight. And keep that in your mind until the end of this story. He disrespects God. Why? God had said, "Do not marry anyone but from the Jewish community. Don't marry outside of your faith." How many people in our culture, in our churches, have married people who didn't have any faith and wonder why it didn't work? Jesus even makes the point when you get to the New Testament, don't be unequally yoked. It is important when we think about marriage, as I mentioned earlier, that when we think about marriage, we are to be cautious about going to Timnah to find a spouse. It's all through the Scriptures. But he says, "In my eye, she is the right one." See, it is this God's will against Samson's will. Now, Samson is oblivious to God because God says, "Don't marry somebody outside of the faith." And the parent says to him, actually, "Couldn't you find a nice Jewish girl? There's a lot of nice Jewish girls. Why don't you go get a nice Jewish girl? Surely you're not going to marry a Philistine woman." Samson says, "I am saying to you, I want her to be my wife. You go and get her for me." So he's disrespected God and his parents and himself. Now, in verse 4, we find something really interesting about this. Chapter 14, verse 4. Right above that, "But Samson said to his father, 'Get her for me. She's the right one for me.'" And in parentheses, God makes sure that we see this. His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. God was going to take the rebellion of Samson, and he was going to take that rebellion, and he was going to try and engage Samson into the Philistine people so that God could begin this process of getting the Philistines out of Israel. He uses Samson's rebellion. Now, Samson never leads Israel in any battle, actually. He's really not a military hero to speak of. He doesn't go to war against the Philistines like leading an army or anything like that. In fact, everything we're going to find out about Samson, this process is of ousting the Philistines, it's all about his personal stuff and his private stuff. When you read it, you're baffled because he's called to be this Nazirite, and yet it's not going that way. He's not paying any attention to what God wants for his life. And I think that's what we do. We forget the sticker on the windshield sometimes, that we are to make sure that when things get out of whack and we rebel against God, that we understand that He reminds us to be restored. It's so important to understand that as a disciple of Jesus. Well, let me talk about the line, the winch, and the wardrobe for just a moment. These three things are going to be very paramount in this story. In verse 5 of chapter 14, we find this happens. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. They're going to meet the family. Now, nobody's talked to the family. Samson has not talked to the family. But they go down, and as they approach the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him, Samson. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. Now listen, there's all kinds of speculation here. Samson should not have gone through any vineyard. He's a Nazirite. The wine of the day was made out of grapes, of course, like it is in our day. And so he should not have had any reminder of wine because he was not to drink any wine. He also, this had to happen away from his parents, so he took another route, it seems. And on that route, a young lion charges him. And there's nobody to even witness this because in a minute he's going to make a riddle out of this whole thing. But he tears the lion apart with his bare hands. And he doesn't tell his parents about this situation. So he goes down and he talks to this woman. Keep all of those little facts in your mind. In verse 8 and 9 of 14, sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. This lion he had killed. In it was a swarm of bees and some honey, which he scooped out with his hands and ate as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some and they too ate it. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Now think about all this story. It's lining up perfectly. He not only eats a food that is unclean, and why is it unclean? Because the bees have made the honey in the carcass of a dead animal. He did not tell his parents that they were eating that honey that was unclean. And they would have never eaten any of it had they known that it came from the carcass of a dead animal. So again, Samson's not even caring about the Nazirite rule. He feeds it to his parents. He doesn't care about his parents. He doesn't care about the call from God on his life. He just goes ahead and touches what's unclean. How often do we do that? We know it's unclean, and yet we touch it anyway. We forget about what God says about that and we get involved. Why do we do that? We're going to find that this particular situation continues to add up to Samson understanding that God is going to leave him because of his sinful ways. To get into the story more, when he gets there to talk to his wife and they're at the feast or the wedding banquet or whatever, he finds out that when he gets there, he's got 30 bodyguards. I don't know if it was a shotgun wedding. It sounds like he had 30 Philistine bodyguards to keep him from running away, maybe. But that's what happens in the story. So, as he's involved in this party, he says, okay, I'm going to give you 30 guys a riddle. And if you can solve the riddle, I will give you a suit of clothes. We've talked about the lion, we've talked about the wench, and now we're going to talk about the wardrobe. So he gives them a riddle. And the riddle is this. And you find it, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. The 30 bodyguards go to his new wife and say, if you don't solve this riddle, we're going to take you out. You're going to be in big trouble. So now his wife has to try to seduce him into telling them, getting from Samson, this riddle, the answer to the riddle. Now, she cries for 7 days. She tries to seduce him and then she tries to cry. She cries for 7 days. Don't you know that Samson was tired of hearing her cry? He must have been, because he gave in and he told her the answer to the riddle, and she tells the 30 guys. So now he's lost the bet, and he has to give them clothes. So Samson, in his rage, goes to a town 26 to 30 miles away of Philistines. He finds 30 guys just hanging around not doing something, so he kills them all and takes their clothes. He comes back and he pays off his debt. Isn't that weird? With all the sin that's going on, he keeps his debt to these guys. You'd think you'd just kill the 30 bodyguards and not worry about having to go down and get clothes and everything off of these dead guys. He brings and gives each one of them a suit of clothes. I kind of like this verse 18. It reads something like this. Here's what Samson said. If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. Now, he was a very romantic guy. I don't think he was in his right mind, Danny, because he called his wife a heifer. He surely had lost it somewhere along the way. He had a problem with being this debonair kind of guy that wanted to impress the women. But here's the thing. The Philistines want to get back at Samson, but Samson gets back to them. When we get to chapter 15, I have a list of things on the board. I just want to plow through it real quick, using that word. Samson's wife is given to a friend. Samson goes off for a while. He comes back. The father-in-law has given his wife to his best man, basically. And the father-in-law, not only that, but he insults his daughter because he says, look, I don't think you really liked her anyway, Samson. Then he says, why don't you just take my younger daughter, because she's prettier than the older one anyway. Now, neither was the father very, you know, looked upon very good from his family. So Samson comes back and his wife has been given to a friend. Samson gets mad and he catches 100 fox and he ties their tails together. Have you ever tried to catch a wild fox? I have. And he was in a pen. My cousin and I spent a whole afternoon trying to catch. We ran him until he couldn't walk and he fell over and we put him in a bag. Seriously. We tried everything in the world to catch that fox because his daddy said, I'm tired of that fox being in this pen. Y'all need to turn him back loose in the woods. And so we chased him and tried to catch him. He finally just got to a point and fell over. And we put him in the bag and took him out and let him go. Now, that's a true story. But here's the thing. Samson took those fox. He tied their tails together. He tied a torch on it. He sent it out into the Philistine fields and burned up everything. So now the Philistines are really mad at him. Guess what? Samson is engaging the Philistines. That's exactly what God wanted him to do. Maybe not that way, but that's what he wanted him to do. The Philistines are so mad that they come back and they kill the father-in-law and they kill Samson's wife. They actually burned them. And now Samson is really ticked at this whole situation. And if you look at verse 19 in chapter 15, we read this. Then God opened up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out. When Samson drank, his strength returned and he revived. Guess what had just happened? He had found the fresh jawbone of a donkey and he had killed a thousand Philistines. And now he's going to be refreshed. You see, verse 20 tells us that Samson led Israel for 20 years as a judge. We don't get the understanding that he led very well. But they did look to him as this tower of strength in their culture at that time. The third thing I want us to look at very quickly is that love is blind. No, really, love is blind. Chapter 16. We've already talked about Samson's weakness. In chapter 16, we find that Samson falls in love. He falls in love with a woman named Delilah. Verse 4. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, see if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver. So Delilah said to Samson, tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied and subdued. So here we have a very one-sided relationship. Delilah doesn't care much about Samson because she is wanting some money out of this relationship. He is in love with her. So undoubtedly, he's going to do anything that she asks, but not right away. Because Samson plays this game with her and gives her three times he gives her false information when she's trying to find out where his strength lies. You see, it was a deal. But I want you to listen to this. Samson is going to give in to her because in verses 15 and 16, we read these words. Then she said to him, how can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the third time you have made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your strength. With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. Now, men, look straight ahead. Don't make any comments. Don't make a facial expression of any kind. Okay? It's biblical. It's in here. That's the way it's worded. I can't help it. It just says she nagged him for days. until he was about to die. Verse 17. That's a lot of nagging. So he told her everything. And I want you to get this. Please listen. No razor has ever been used on my head, he said, because I have been a Nazarite set apart to God since birth. Amazing. He admits his special call from God. He admits it. He's ignored it. He's been oblivious to it. And now he admits it. He said, if my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man. Was it his hair? Surely God wouldn't have given him strength through the hair. See, four or five times in these verses, in these chapters 13 through 16, it says the Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson. You see, the hair was about the vow. The hair was not the thing. It was the fact that the hair represented the Nazarite vow. And when the hair would be gone from his head, the vow would be broken. No matter how he lost the hair, the vow to God would be broken to be a Nazarite. So he simply says, if you cut my hair. He goes to sleep on Delilah's lap. She has lulled him into a stupor. He's in love. In verse 20 of chapter 16, after he was asleep, she had someone come in and cut his hair. Then in verse 20, she shouts out, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. Oh, really? She knew it. They were coming. He awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Folks, when we leave God, when we find ourselves in sin, we need to understand. It may be possible that God is not going to empower us at that moment. Our allegiance is in the wrong direction. And unless we restore our faith and our allegiance and our loyalty and our love back to God, it says that God had left him and he did not know that God had left him. The Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes. Remember, she was the right woman in his eyes, that first wife from Timnah. Now he is to have no eyes. They gouged out his eyes and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding in prison. He was now a prisoner, shackled, and he was a spectacle. Blind, having to be led around, acting mostly like an oxen for these people. He was grinding their grain for them. There's no glory in that hero at this point, is there? When he was caught sleeping with the enemy, he was caught without his power. Without his eyes, he's pretty debilitated. But now, we're going to look at the restoration of the hero. In verse 22, beautiful verse. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Your hair grows 1/8 an inch a week. When you add it all up, it took about 6 years, 6 to 7 years for Samson's hair to grow back out. He's in prison. He's just an old oxen. The people of the Philistines had forgotten about him. They have this very lively, drunken party, actually. And while they're in this, we need to understand, it's been about 6 or 7 years. His hair now is growing back. Let me read you what one commentator says about Samson. Samson's an ugly portrait of a man who is disrespectful to his parents, callous toward his Nazarite calling, without any loyalty to his own people, compromising in his ethics, rude to his wife, flippant with his tongue, and driven by lust, eroticism, and appetite. Yahweh's Spirit, God's Spirit, must indeed overpower this man if any good is going to come from him. I would tell you that we need the power of God's Spirit in us if any good is going to come from us. We are in that same situation. Restoration does begin at this lively party. Because you see, they've forgotten him. But they wanted to have some fun, so they said, go get Samson. We'll have a little fun. We'll see this blind Israelite, how weak he is, and we'll laugh and have a good time. Well, Samson comes into the party in the temple. And he tells the guy leading him, you know, I'm tired. Lean me up against one of the main pillars of the temple. And so he goes and he leans up against one pillar. There's another pillar within reach of him. And he's leaning there. And then the Bible tells us that Samson prays. In verse 28, chapter 16, Samson is going to pray. O sovereign Lord, remember me, O God. Please strengthen me just one more, just once more. And let me, with one blow, get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes. Again, he's thinking about Samson. Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against the temple, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, now he's thinking about his Nazarite vow. Let me die with the Philistines. Then he pushed with all of his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than while he lived. Samson, called by God from the womb to be God's man, to begin the process of ousting the Philistines from the Jewish nation. He killed many more when he died than when he lived. Here's the thing. Of all the people, Samson did less with more than anybody. My question is, are you doing less with more? We are in a favored nation. We have so much. And in our favor, are we honoring our pledge and our vow and our promise to God that we made when we were baptized into Jesus Christ? If we've never given our lives to Jesus, are we kind of wanting God to help us, but we're not really wanting to commit to putting some sin behind us, starting a brand new life? That's what being a disciple of Jesus is all about. Here's the beauty, y'all. God can restore anybody. I hope you believe that. You remember the song we sang? You make beautiful things out of dust. You were created out of dust. I love your analogy earlier, Parrish, about the dust on the boxes. The other dust is that you were made out of dust. I was made out of dust. God can make beautiful things out of dust. And the next line, beautiful things out of us. And you know who us is? That's you. That's every person in this room. That's not some other people. That's us. That's you. The restoration of a fallen hero can happen because God has the power to do that. his family came and claimed the body from the crumbled temple and buried him with his people. Are you doing less with more? If you are, you can be restored.